I can either tell you some stories from my childhood or we can do a case. Oh, you'd rather do the case, okay. I'll go ahead and thank our speakers in advance, but are you ready to go, Amy, or you ready to go? So this first case is a 70-year-old male who had a painless left arm mass, he said, for about 2 to 3 months. He was finishing his shower, looking in the mirror, and noticed this mass. Now that he's been made aware of it, he thinks it's getting bigger. He does not have any other significant medical history, and he presents to your office with his exam. Here's a close-up view of his left arm, and then his right arm for comparison. And the first question is, if a patient presents to you with this mass, what is your next step and first best step in the workup of this patient?
So,
you can come up here if you want, yeah. Microphones aren't on.
So just a few things that I noticed, certainly the size of this lesion. I think the location, it's very close to a lot of important real estate in the axilla, the brachial plexus and the main blood supply to the hand. I always like to get, even if I have a mass that I think might need biopsy, I always like to get the MRI first or a preoperative roadmap if he doesn't have a contraindication to an MRI, simply because even a needle biopsy, if you're going to do that, or certainly an open biopsy, can create hematoma and distort things and not necessarily show you what the mass truly looks like. So I would certainly start with an MRI given how the size of this and it looks like it potentially might be deep as well.
Anything different you would add? How many people in the audience would order an MRI scan off the bat on this patient? How many people would order a CT scan? What about an ultrasound? How many of you have ultrasound machines in your office that you routinely use? So this patient received an MRI scan, and I'll give you three images. So the question then comes, what would your next best steps be in managing this patient? Would you biopsy, excise, or
So looking at this, it looks like fat on all the sequences. So it's either in that category of a benign lipoma or because of its sheer size, I think more likely an atypical lipoma. It does surround the neurovascular bundle. I think there was a couple cuts where it looked like the neurovascular bundle was in the middle of that. Right there. This is not something that I would go and purposely sacrifice anything important to get out. I would excise this. I don't think a needle biopsy or an open biopsy helps you. It doesn't change the plan because, as we had discussed, a marginal excision is what would be recommended for a homogeneous tumor that matches fat.
I think the only thing I'd add, if you know, the advantage of doing a biopsy here, you could do it in clinic and you could feel it after you've gotten the imaging so your hematoma won't distort it, is that if you know that it's just a atypical lipomatous tumor, it may change what your margin is going to be on that neurovascular bundle and that you may not need to be as aggressive. So I think going in, having the pathology nailed down, especially when it's against critical structures, is important.
If you do a biopsy fat mass, do you send the biopsy for MDM2 testing on that biopsy?
I mean, in this case, it's going to come out. We do routine, but you know, we're at a sarcoma center where we're doing this on a usual basis. So no, that's not everywhere.
Oh. So you would target on this particular tumor, you could target any of that. And there is actually a good paper that looked at a couple hundred needle biopsies of fatty tumors and looked at post-resection. This was by Dr. Rubin, one of our pathologists, American Journal of Surgical Pathology, and compared the biopsy MDM2 positivity to the surgical resection positivity. And they correlated, the R equivalent was 0.9 something. So any part of that tumor, you can believe from a needle biopsy in terms of MDM2, if that's what you, if I understand correctly. You are, but again, the MRI shows a homogeneous tumor, so this looks similar all throughout. So a large tumor, sampling bias is always a concern, though.
I think one of the keys is the utilization now with MDM2 testing. Your point is you can't biopsy a fat mass and make that delineation, but today sending it for special FISH and MDM2 evaluation makes the difference in determining this mass. How many people would biopsy this mass before attempting resection? How many of you would be comfortable to excise this mass based on location in the neurovascular bundle? And this mass underwent excision, what was held to be complete excision. It was MDM2 positive, so the diagnosis was that of an atypical lipoma or a low-grade liposarcoma. The next question is, what margin status is considered appropriate depending on what the pathology report says? And what is the role of radiation and follow-up for this patient? And I'll ask the audience, how many of you now, if you have a large fat mass, atypical lipoma or well-differentiated liposarcoma would radiate this field or radiate this mass, surgical bed? Was it after surgery? So the patient now presents you, he's had surgery, you have the mass is excised, but it's MDM2 positive. Well, it's a great question. I would ask the panel, and we get these patients referred because on the resection of this mass, often the margins are called positive. But the masses, we know in excising them, you can't get a better margin on them. So I don't know what you guys think. And that's a question, what is an appropriate margin? And I often get referred these patients because a complete excision by standards what it has done, but the pathology report reads multiple positive margins. And the question comes, do you have to do a re-excision if you have a positive margin on an atypical lipoma, well-differentiated liposarcoma?
Well, in a discussion with our pathologists at UCLA, they haven't made usually a definitive comment on that. There will sometimes be a line about there is a capsule that represents the surgical margin, which is what we see clinically in the operating room. The risk of these returning is low, especially if you knew going in that you were dealing with an atypical lipoma tumor and you were peeling it off the neurovascular bundle. So I don't think radiation is, I mean, it's never been associated with any survival benefit. There's data that in high-grade tumors, it decreases local recurrence, but never shown any benefit in low-grade tumors, which this is. And then there's a concern based on the patient's age of a later radiation-associated sarcoma. So I would really try to avoid radiating this patient.
I concur. I think the other thing to add is the location. If you radiate at sarcoma dosing, which is typically far more than carcinoma dosing, you're going to have a lifelong of lymphedema, perhaps a brachioplexus neuritis. You're going to have a lot of more headaches down the road. And the only great decent evidence, I wouldn't say great, is that French sarcoma group paper to show multiply recurrent atypical lipomas. And so these are patients that I would say there's a risk of this coming back. We're going to get an MRI 6 months down the road as a baseline, and then I'll follow you annually. And you know, I follow these patients for at least a good 5 years, maybe not necessarily with an MRI every time, but you know, just because there is that potential risk. But again, it's not, we're not treating something that these patients will potentially die from. This is an atypical lipoma to the point where the WHO has tried to rename this. We typically try not to put a cancer diagnosis in the patient's chart any longer, i.e. not calling it a well-differentiated liposarcoma. Not in the extremity. Different than the retroperitoneum. I would also suggest some of the times they can be very white in appearance as well that I've seen. I'm not sure the correlation of color change, but they usually do look different than the surrounding normal fat.
So the next case following on this is a 64-year-old woman who presents with what she describes as a left thigh lump. She notices when she's sitting. She rides a lot in a motorhome with her husband and has really begun to notice this mass. You can't see the mass in her leg, but her examination showed a mobile, doughy mass that was not painful. She actually got these images. And maybe if you guys would like to comment on the MRI scan.
Well, it doesn't follow your rule of consistent fat signal throughout. You have some area there. I was bright on T1, and we worry that there, you know, it's hard to tell with these atypical lipomatous tumors if they have areas of sclerosing change, which can look like dedifferentiation. So those would be my concern with that haziness. So if you're going to have a biopsy, you'd want to have it directed to those wider areas on the T2.
I think one thing I didn't mention, but sometimes these intramuscular lipomas, the ones deep to fascia inside the muscle, you see all the little wisps of muscle fibers kind of interspersed throughout this, and it can throw you off in terms of, especially that T1 over there, looking, are those muscle fibers that you're just looking at, these individual fascicles and this wispy appearance? Is it truly an area that's a nodule, like we saw some of those dedifferentiated liposarcoma diagnoses? I would say I don't see anything on here that's clearly concerning for a true nodule per se. Sometimes atypical lipomas can look, have a little bit of heterogeneity, but you don't see the very distinctly different area. I'm not seeing anything on here that looks clearly concerning for an aggressive process. I would suggest that this is most likely an intramuscular atypical lipoma.
So we actually would not biopsy this, and I would assume this is a well-differentiated liposarcoma and actually probably take it out with some degree of margin. I think that you can see, it doesn't have to be a solid nodule. You can get these septae that go through the tumor, and those can represent focal areas of dedifferentiation. So your best chance at curing this patient of this disease is at the primary time of resection, and in this case, the tumor is not near the sciatic nerve. You're going to have very little functional consequences by taking out a half a centimeter around this, and so we would just go in without a biopsy and take this out as if it was a ALT or a well-differentiated lipo, which we consider basically the same thing.
How many of you in the audience would biopsy this mass? And how many people would remove the mass in a marginal manner? And how many people with a wide excision? So the patient underwent this surgical procedure. The diagnosis did come back as a well-differentiated liposarcoma. Margins were not reported. And what was noted was that the pre-op MRI gave measurements of the lesion to be 5x7x13 centimeters. The pathology report gave the notation that the mass was 4x9x10 centimeters. So the question comes, what is the next best step in the management of this patient?
I usually start with a repeat MRI, which gives me a sense of whether there's any gross residual disease. I used to re-resect all of them if I thought it was an R1 margin, but the reality is an ALT, a well-differentiated liposarcoma, may never recur. And so even in the context of an R1 margin, and so it's gonna be a relatively morbid procedure to re-excise this in this context, and the well-differentiated liposarcoma, even if there's a small amount there, won't metastasize and isn't life-threatening. So that I almost always watch them now and re-excise in the context of a gross recurrence.
Yeah, I agree. An R1, I would watch. If it was an R2 or there was clearly a big chunk of tumor remaining, then that's a discussion to have with the patient. I have to imagine there's probably gross tumor since the pathology report is significantly smaller than the preoperative MRI dimensions. It's always a alarming sign.
I would have to say I always, when I see a transverse incision, I'm always concerned too that the surgeon may not have been as aware or cognizant of what was potentially going to occur. So this patient did get a repeat MRI scan or a postoperative MRI scan. So the first question is, what do you disclose to the patient? How do you disclose, and what do you see on this MRI scan?
Well, then we can clearly see the residual tumor. You know, I think you just need to reassure the patient here, because this is, again, not generally a life-threatening process, and there's no race to go and re-resect this. Certainly, we like to let that incision heal well, because it is going to be morbid with maybe even requiring some kind of graft if you can't close that defect. So, I think the just trying to keep them and yourself calm, because this being a well-differentiated lipoma is okay, and this can be watched or re-resected when it's patients healed up.
Would you consider radiation at this point, knowing that this was a large transverse incision and completely excised, potentially a larger contaminated field?
I would not, simply because it's low grade, and radiation has better effect with highly reproducing cells. Again, I think the evidence is limited. Did you say pathology was consistent with so pathology is consistent with that. It's been proven. If you go back to that transverse excision or incision picture, they're very, very different. I would probably try to re-excise just the scar and maybe make like a yin-yang type incision. If after a discussion with the patient, hey, you still have a tumor, it's probably going to grow, we can watch it. This is not a life-threatening process, but I don't think it's wrong to go back and take it out. If this was a high-grade sarcoma, you would be taking out a huge elliptical area on the back of that thigh and be doing a pretty sizable skin graft at the very least. So, there's technique is certainly changed just by the grade and the histology for sure.
Yeah, I think if you go back to the original clinical trials from the NCI where they looked at radiation in the adjuvant setting for these tumors, they included a substantive number of low-grade tumors. And you started out with a local recurrence in the absence of radiation that was only in the range of 12 to 15%. And yes, radiation seemed to help that in the randomized trial, but 100 patients, they're all going to get the side effects of radiation, whereas really at most you're going to get benefit in 10 patients. So for a tumor like this that doesn't have any substantive disease-related death to give radiation, you're definitely taking a chance as far as quality of life is without any clear benefit as far as survival.
How many of you in the audience, if this were your patient, you discovered an incomplete excision, would re-excise the mass? And how many people would refer to a tertiary care center? So this patient did undergo a re-excision, feeling like this was a low-grade lesion. The scar was excised, and through this type of exposure, sort of an extensile approach was made. The discussion was had about radiation and considerations, and the patient declined in favor of serial examinations with MRI scans. We'll do one more case if you think there's time to, and then go back to our talk. This is a 70-year-old male who noticed a growth on his left knee. This is his actual presentation photo. And on exam, he says the mass is firm. It doesn't seem mobile. He denies any trauma, anything that he can recall that would have happened to the leg. So the first question is, how would you handle a patient who presents with this clinical finding?
So I have a very low threshold to get an MRI, even on small tumors. Anything that's hard and painless always has some potential concern for me. And I've had enough of these re-excised to realize that, sent our way to realize that even small tumors can still burn you. So I do not think there is anything wrong with spending a little money and getting an MRI on this to prove what you're dealing with, what's involved deep. Maybe it's a myxoma. Maybe it's something that an MRI can really show you, but I sincerely doubt it's a fatty tumor if it's really hard and firm. Fatty tumors don't usually present like that.
Yeah. So it feels firm and is not mobile. How many of you would get a three-dimensional image on this patient? So the patient did get an MRI scan ordered for evaluation. And if the panel would like to comment on these MRI scans.
So, I mean, it's a geographic lesion. I don't see any obvious contrast images to look at, but that is enough concern to me to say I'd like to know what it is. And I think for two reasons. One, it's small. I understand that, but you're going to, if that's any kind of malignancy, whether it's a primary skin malignancy, soft tissue sarcoma, et cetera, you're going to have to take a fairly wide amount of skin because you won't get a margin on that skin. So you're either looking at a pretty sizable incision to close this, or because it's on an area that moves a lot, it's on the flexor side of the knee, you may need a skin graft, et cetera. So I think that's I would certainly biopsy this in the office before I did anything for those two reasons.
The other comment, the imaging, showing that the fat side imaging is a little concerning because of the difference in the signal there surrounding the lesion. So another reason why you definitely want to start with a biopsy, sort of know what you're dealing with. Because some of these, myxofibrosarcomas can have these tails that go out into the fascia and make it difficult if you just excise that nodule to get clean margins, and you're going to have to be coming back.
Completely agree. Yeah.
So the key finding here is that this is not fat. It doesn't follow fat on sequences, and on the T1 weighted image, it's dark. It's different from the surrounding fat. And on the fat suppression image, it doesn't suppress. Interestingly, how many of you would excise this mass? Interestingly, the patient did undergo a surgical excision. It was a high-grade soft tissue sarcoma with positive margins, and the mass was noted on the pathology report to be 4 centimeters in size. So the question for the panel is, what do you do now? If you're the surgeon who has removed this mass, what do you do? And if you're the referring doctor who receives the mass, what are your considerations?
I think you're going to think again about whether there's gross disease there or whether there's microscopic disease. High-grade sarcoma like this would have a reasonable risk of local recurrence, and a local recurrence in this area would be difficult to treat. So I would want to get a baseline MRI, and potentially I would consider giving him radiation before doing any kind of re-excision to minimize the joint fibrosis related to radiation, giving it in the neoadjuvant setting, and then treating him with surgery and potentially a flap.
Yeah, I think just from a bit of an orthopedic perspective, one of the reasons why I would want to know what that is before excising it is, if you have a small little lump in the middle of the front of your thigh, it's muscle for miles and miles around. There's not a whole lot of collateral that is tremendously functionally limiting. In this scenario, all the ligaments that keep stability to the inside part of your knee, the capsule to the knee, all those things may need to be re-excised. And so you're creating a huge functional issue down the road that may just be the beginning domino that falls, that he now needs a revision type knee replacement and, potential infection, et cetera. I'll also throw one caveat out there, and this is not necessarily the goal of this talk, but there's lots of different ways you can do radiation as well. And one of the nice things about a sarcoma team that treats radiation is this is something that I would consider brachytherapy for. And that is where you re-excise a big wide area, you get your margins, you actually lay catheters down, put a wound back on there. And our radiation oncologists can either treat definitively, or they can give brachytherapy and then come back and do a much smaller boost of radiation after the flap is healed. And the reason for doing that is you don't necessarily get all that high dose to the knee joint. You don't, and therefore you get less swelling, you get less arthrofibrosis, i.e. joint stiffness, and just the long-term side effects that you're never going to get to go away. So it's just some little techniques that you can do to try to minimize that functional issue. But absolutely, re-excision and radiation in some form.
Yeah, and I just echo Dr. Crago's point about the real benefit of radiation in these high grade and the timing before or after surgery. I mean, the patient's already undergone an excision, but in the randomized trials, they saw better joint function when they gave it preoperatively, presumably because you get a lower dose over a more limited field.
Absolutely. I think a core biopsy would be the preferred way if you have the resources to do that. Or there's absolutely no harm in sending it to your radiologist and saying, can you put an ultrasound on this? Or, it's very superficial. You can feel it, but they'll want to use some kind of modality, and letting them do the biopsy as long as you talk to them about where you want that needle and, et cetera.
But what percentage of soft tissue sarcomas do you guys do an open biopsy versus a needle / core?
I've never done an open
Everything's
biopsy.
Everything's cored.
I only do opens if it's there's a clinical pathology mismatch. Either the core biopsy or the FNA comes back as saying inconclusive, or this looks benign and yet it looks really aggressive on a advanced imaging, and I don't believe it. Maybe twice a year.
But and that's pretty uncommon.
Uncommon.
The studies of the core biopsy show that grade is pretty accurate, is accurate in almost 90% of cases, and that's out of date. I mean, that was papers published almost 20 years ago now. So with the improved pathology, with more cytogenetics known about these tumors, the ability to diagnose preoperatively on a core biopsy, it's less than 10% where it's not concordant with the clinical findings.
I think that still speaks to going to a sarcoma center where you have that expertise and understanding. I think still on some myxoid liposarcomas with a questionable round cell component, we may potentially do an open biopsy, because if you radiate those patients, you lose the ability to make that diagnosis. But I think we would agree that even the biopsy and the ability to have the pathology team makes doing that biopsy at an institution familiar with sarcomas even more important. This was the MRI scan. So as Dr. Mesko discussed, the first thing you want to do if you get that pathology report that says soft tissue sarcoma is re-imaging the surgical field. And so this patient, I had that done. And then the question becomes, does this change your thoughts and management on radiation? Yes or no, type of radiation, and then considerations for re-excision.
No, I think I would do the same thing. I mean, you can't really tell at this point whether that's seroma, postoperative change, or gross residual tumor. So I'd still radiate first and then go back in and do a re-excision.
And that signal intensity was there preoperatively and it's still there. So yeah, I'd be concerned that that represents residual tumor.
I think, I mean, the other question is it would make a big difference too if it was myxofibrosarcoma versus a UPS. If that's myxofibrosarcoma on the final pathology, you're going to have to take, just in terms of surgical planning, you're going to have to take much wider margins and excise really all of that infiltrated area anteriorly if you want to try and optimize your next surgery. And if there's any question, what we'll often do is we'll do the excision, put a VAC dressing on for 3 to 4 days, get final margins, and then go back and do a reconstruction. Because the rate of positive margins, even after a wide excision there, is probably in the range of 25%. So if you have a positive margin, you've marked it, you know where it is, you go back in, you take an extra 2 centimeters, and then you let the plastic surgeon do the flap reconstruction. But that will make some degree of difference as far as how you manage it surgically.
So we have become big fans of doing that as well, especially for the myxofibrosarcomas. Put a wound back on, temporize, and then come back for surgery. This patient opted for radiation therapy and reconstruction, so he ended up getting a wide excision, gastric flap, and skin graft for coverage. Again, a good excision with negative margins could have avoided the functional deficits that will come with this massive surgery. I think we'll try to see if Dr. Crago's talk will come up.
All right.
Yeah, what's up? All right, well, here now, maybe you can clean up and remind us of everything that we've been learning in this session, Dr. Crago from Sloan Kettering.
So it might actually be that this works out well, because a lot of what I'm going to tell you is a little bit repetitive from the former talks. And so just to kind of, what I wanted to do was just to kind of go over the workup again, really quite quickly. We'll go through that and then look at some cases of common mistakes that we see. So I don't have any disclosures. Again, I think important to not assume that a soft tissue lesion is benign. So actively diagnose something as being malignant or benign. If it looks like a sebaceous cyst, then it's a sebaceous cyst. But if it's a cyst that doesn't look like a sebaceous cyst, isn't clinically a ganglion cyst, you know, you have to think that gives you a higher risk of there being some risk of malignancy there. So again, imaging MRI is a study of choice. You want T1 and T2 signals with and without contrast. You get very limited information from ultrasound or plain films. And again, we do a core biopsy for almost all of our diagnosis pre-op, except in the context of lipomatous tumors. And those are 95% accurate in determining malignancy, 88% to determine grade. And again, that's even on out-of-date data. So if you can't confirm a diagnosis of a benign etiology, then we plan our excisional biopsies or resections as if the tumor is malignant, particularly if it's a deep and a re-excision would be difficult. Transverse incisions are not appropriate. They make the reconstruction much more difficult, as do thin skin flaps. And you want to always minimize disturbance to the underlying muscle planes. It's very difficult if somebody has a tumor in the vastus intermedialis that's near the vastus medialis, and somebody goes in laterally to do the excision, then you've completely contaminated all of the planes in the anterior compartment, so your resection is much more extensive. Small lesions we consider for primary excision without a diagnosis. Those are usually things like angiolipomas, dermatofibromas, but even small lesions can be malignant, and I often will do a pre-op biopsy because a nodule like this that's just 2 centimeters in diameter on the skin just under the epithelium can represent a range of different types of tumors. A DFSP, which would require wide margins because of infiltrative nature, a Merkel cell carcinoma I've seen look exactly like this, which would require a sentinel lymph node biopsy, a UPS, which is a straightforward excision, or an angiosarcoma on the scalp, which can be multifocal and surgery is not really appropriate as a first step. So just to review some common errors and diagnostic scenarios, we'll look at lipoma versus liposarcoma. We've done this already, but just to reiterate, high-grade sarcoma versus hematoma. This is another common scenario we see. Patients come in having had a hematoma drain that was actually a necrotic sarcoma. Differential diagnosis of myxoid lesions versus cysts and fibrous lesions, particularly desmoid tumors, because you can avoid unnecessary procedures if you diagnose those before doing surgery. So one of the most common scenarios that we see patients come in with is that they say, oh, the doctor told me not to worry about this, it's just a lipoma. So there's a delay in diagnosis and you can be 4 or 5 months after the initial presentation. The other thing is they thought it was just a lipoma and so unplanned excision. This is just a graph showing the benign tumors that we've resected at Memorial over the last 30 years now, and you can see the reason for this is because lipoma is actually is by far the most common type of benign malignancy, that benign tumor that people are seeing in the clinic, and this is even in a highly selected scenario where we don't take out much benign disease. This is an example of a patient who came to me having been told she had a lipoma, an unplanned excision. This was a 10 centimeter lesion. No reason to consider that this was a lipoma. It's the kind of thing where it doesn't make sense to be just a benign tumor. So do that pre-op workup, get the MRI, get the biopsy, because when they did the excision here, they went through the 10 centimeter incision laterally and then actually needed a counter incision over the gluteus to release the tumor, which ended up being a synovial sarcoma. So a very high risk tumor in a very young patient. The clinical diagnosis of a lipoma is really based on the tumor size and its feel. These are just a subset of the lipomas that we've resected, and you can see that really 2/3 of these tumors are less than 5 centimeters. So if you're getting to see a tumor that's over that size, you really do have to consider, is it an atypical lipomatous tumor or something even worse? And the ALTs that we've seen, over 80% of these are greater than 10 centimeters. So there's a real dichotomy as far as size. So if the tumor is less than five, if the tumor is greater than 5 centimeters, consider imaging and excise as if it's malignant. If it's hard as opposed to soft, again, imaging versus malignancy. If it's fixed, painful, growing, deep, all of those things require preoperative workup. If not, you can diagnose it as a lipoma and you do a conservative excision. In most cases, that's almost always okay. But you really do have to go through this, because even the small fixed tumors can represent malignancies, like this patient who came in with a myxofibrosarcoma that was actually picked up before surgery. Biopsy for the atypical lipomatous tumors. The reason we do not do them routinely at our institution is because the lipomas and the ALTs, it's very difficult on a small biopsy to be able to distinguish the two. This is a picture of a lipoma. This is a picture of an ALT. You can see they're rare atypical cells. This is probably a good example where you would pick it up on the biopsy, but even then it's difficult for me to tell the difference. So if your pathologist isn't well acquainted with these tumors, it might be difficult for them to find as well. There's a nice paper from the group at Emory that looked at clinical characteristics of lipoma versus atypical lipomatous tumor. So it's not just size that's different. Patients with ALTs and well-def liposarcomas tend to be a little bit older. 71% of those patients were over 55. The tumors tend to be lower extremity versus torso for the lipomas. And a prior surgery, a tumor that's recurred, you have to really think about an ALT as opposed to a lipoma in that case. These are just, again, pictures of the sort of what ended up being an intramuscular lipoma. This can also represent an atypical lipomatous tumor. This is the kind of patients I would take out with sort of a marginal excision, try and stay in the muscle fibers closest to the tumor as opposed to really doing an aggressive resection. When you start to get the septae and the more nodular components, this is when you think about occult dedifferentiation and focal dedifferentiation that's really going to increase your risks of local recurrence and tumor progression to a dedifferentiated tumor if it does recur. And then this is a MRI. These are T1 sequences. Again, you can see while this part of the tumor looks like fat, this nodular component does not look like fat. This is where you're getting really significant dedifferentiation. And if you looked at these on post-contrast images, you would see that this area enhances. The second common scenario we see that can cause significant complications and more difficulty in doing the reconstructions is in high-grade sarcomas versus hematomas. And these are important to recognize. Here you can see this is a T1 fat sat with contrast on a patient who came to us having been diagnosed with a hematoma in the calf because of these sort of cystic non-enhancing components of the lesion. And when they drained it through a surgical drain, the tumor ended up fungating through the skin as the patient progressed. In worst cases, we've seen patients undergo embolization of these tumors because they were misdiagnosed as a hematoma or a hemangioma, and that again is a difficult problem. So a hematoma, if you look at it, really you can have this non-enhancing lesion, but there's no nodularity or enhancing nodularity around the edges. Whereas if you look at this tumor, while there are these non-enhancing regions in the tumor, there are also these large areas of the tumor that are enhancing, suggesting something else is going on. This can be quite subtle. This is another patient where most of her tumor actually looked like this. It was a 15-centimeter lesion, but on two or three of the MRI cuts, you can see the nodularity on the side. And in these cases, you want to do either cytology or a core biopsy, and your core biopsy under MRI guidance so that you can try and make sure that you're sampling the most risky areas of the tumor. These, again, are just examples of high-grade tumors. You can see the enhancement around the edges with these central areas of necrosis that don't enhance on the gadolinium. But those things are very important to differentiate. In this case, what I would do is do an FNA, make sure I don't see any evidence on cytology of malignant cells, and then follow that patient to make sure that the hematoma is resolved, as opposed to just saying it's a hematoma and you never need to come back again, because that too has caused problems and delay in diagnosis. So I always ask about trauma or pain, anticoagulation use, things that would put a patient at higher risk for a hematoma. Look at the periphery, consider biopsy, and then following the patient to document resolution. Again, cystic lesions, this is just the third example I wanted to go over. Cysts and myxoid sarcomas are similar in appearance on T2 images, so they're both hyper-intense, and so sometimes radiologists will get confused about that diagnosis, and a myxoid lesion will be diagnosed as a cyst. So again, it's important to actively diagnose benign etiologies. A sebaceous cyst, we all are taught as interns, has the punctate lesion in the skin. A ganglion cyst is going to be over a tendon. Cystic lesions like a Baker cyst can be associated with DJD, so you want to see whether or not, before assuming it's a benign cyst, you can associate it with one of those underlying etiologies. This is just an example of a patient who came to me with a cyst on the abdominal wall. It was simple on ultrasound. We did a plain excision, but it turned out to be a hydroadenoma. So even a simple cyst on ultrasound can be a malignancy or a premalignant lesion. And you should, if you cannot say that it's an epidermal inclusion cyst or a ganglion cyst, you should be excising it as if there's a potential for malignancy in the lesion. These are examples of myxomas. You can see hyperintense on T2 signaling. This is a benign myxoid lesion. These lesions have edema in the muscle, so this type of tumor can be taken out with a marginal excision. A biopsy can often diagnose it preoperatively, and there are specific genetic mutations in GNAS that the pathologist can look at now to confirm that diagnosis and say, yes, you can do a marginal excision as opposed to having to worry about this being a malignancy. This is very different than a myxoid fibrosarcoma. These patients, while the myxomas tend to happen in elderly patients and you get this edema within the muscle, myxofibrosarcoma, they happen in patients in their 60s and 70s, can be in the superficial tissue and have these infiltrating tails around the lesion that can go between fascial planes. So you can see them going along the superficial fascia. In the deeper tissues, they can go between the muscles, and you have to be cognizant of that, both as a diagnostic sign, so that if you had this patient who showed up and the pathology was read as a benign myxoma, you should have a little bit of a higher index of suspicion to ask for that to be re-evaluated. They can also be multifocal and quite large and difficult to treat. So this is a little bit of a busy slide, but I just wanted to kind of put out there the fact that there are 100 different types of sarcoma, and we're starting to understand these more and more over time. And even within, for example, the myxoid lesions, there can be different subtypes of tumors. So, and each one is not only treated differently in the context of multimodality therapy, but have different clinical characteristics, and now different genetics that we understand define the disease pathology. For example, you can see myxomas in middle-aged patients. We talked about they can have the edema around them and GNAS mutations. They can be treated with a marginal excision, whereas these myxofibrosarcomas can have the tails. They occur in the elderly patients, curvilinear vessels on pathology, and then some of the translocation-associated tumors like myxoid round cell and low-grade fibromyxoid tumors you see in young patients in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, and these are treated with surgery alone. Or in the context of myxoid round cell liposarcoma, often with chemotherapy or radiation before surgery. So you really want to try and define what the subtype of the tumor you're dealing with is, because it might affect what multimodality therapy you use. And if there's any question, many of the sarcoma centers, even if the patient themselves can't travel, will look at the pathology to try and help you with that and try and make sure you have the adequate diagnosis. And again, most of us at the centers will be happy to talk through the cases with you and tell you if there's any special considerations based on histology. The last tumor I just wanted to quickly go over are the fibrous lesions, particularly the desmoid tumors. The fibrous lesions are quite dark, both on T1 signals and on T2 signals. So this is a classic fibroma. These are T1 images where you can see the lesion is quite dark on the MRI. You would see the same sort of signal on a T2 sequence, suggesting a fibrous component. The desmoids happen in young patients, 30 to 40 years old, and you can see they can have variable content of fibrous component because of the collagen associated with the lesions. So this one has very little fibrous tissue. It's quite a cellular lesion. This one is a mixed type tumor. You can see the dark fibrous areas there. And this is a burned out desmoid in a patient who had been treated with radiation prior, and you can see no cellularity there. So the important part about sort of trying to recognize these on MRIs, and they're actually the fourth most common type of sarcoma or soft tissue tumor that we consider relatively malignant, is that often these now don't even need to be treated. So you want to be able to diagnose them based on the clinical scenario, based on your pathology, and then can often watch those if they're small. So just in conclusion, we don't assume that the soft tissue lesions are benign unless we can prove it by clinical exam, by MRI, by biopsy. If we can't prove it's benign, we treat it as if it's malignant. And then we're very aware of these common pitfalls, lipoma, hematoma, and cyst versus sarcoma, and now are increasingly aware that histologic subtype defines how a tumor can behave, what its risk is of distal metastasis and local recurrence, and whether or not that means a patient should have adjuvant or neoadjuvant therapy. Okay, thanks.